Hi everyone, welcome back to the Value Professional Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Shwara, and today we have our first episode, which is also the first in the mini-series of Find Out More. It's a panel which consists of four PhD students doing a range of different subjects from chemistry to AI and also biology. I'll be asking them some questions from you guys, and also just some general questions about how they start their PhD and what their PhD is on. So I hope you enjoy the episode.
Introduce yourself and give an overview of what your PhD is on.
Hi, I'm Angus at the University of Cambridge. My PhD is looking at the application of AI in structural engineering, and then also progressing on to more probabilistic assessments of vibrations in buildings.
Hi, I'm Helena. I'm doing my PhD in chemical biology at Imperial College London, and my PhD is about trying to engineer the cancer immune response by engineering the by modulating the body's immune response via lymphocyte interactions with tumor cells by using novel nanomaterial-based drugs.
Hi, my name is Matthew. I'm doing my PhD at King's College London alongside with GSDT, Guy's and St. Thomas Hospital. And mine is focusing on the immunology of sepsis and how that changes over time.
Hi, my name's Ashlyn. I'm doing my PhD at King's as well, in the same lab as Matt. My PhD is also on sepsis immunology and lymphocyte receptor sequences and differences in like T and B cell interactions in sepsis.
So, I mean, just from a general perspective, what's the actual process of starting a PhD like?
Yeah, I think mine was a bit less conventional. So I was working for a year after my master's, and then I literally was really unsure about working. It wasn't a great start to work life. But then I literally went on a website called findthephd.com, and that's pretty much how I started looking for PhDs. And then turns out I knew my supervisor from a friend of a friend. And I literally just applied to me like you would a job, really. It was quite a straightforward process, to be honest. I literally dropped him an email, said I knew he's turned out to be one of his good friends. And then we sort of just started chatting, and the project sort of unfolded from that, really. It's quite a simple process, actually.
Was the project something that he was working on before, and it was something you were interested in, or do you kind of go in with an idea of what you want to do?
So initially my project was completely different actually. It was wildly different. It was to do with concrete structures and optimizing them. And that's something I was doing anyway in my work. But then it really just transitioned from more self-exploration. So my supervisor was quite young, I guess, and in that respect he's quite open to new ideas and branching out. So I just basically proposed this new project about 6 months ago. And sort of set up all the collaborations with other departments in Cambridge and was like, look, I think there's a real market we can tap into that people haven't identified yet. And that was really it, to be honest. The sort of self-exploration was quite a good way to do it, apparently. But
cool. And was that the same for all of you?
No, for me it was very different. So I did my undergraduate degree and an undergraduate integrated master's in chemistry at a different university, the University of Birmingham. And I had a great time, but I thought for my PhD, I want to be able to do something more interdisciplinary, switch area of research a bit and go to another university to see how different it is and what it's like there. So I applied only through CDTs, which is Centre for Doctoral Training, which is kind of a more structured PhD program that tends to be a bit longer. And I thought I want a 4-year funded project, with the first year having more lectures and sort of training courses so that I can adapt to a new research area. So I applied through the CDT website, then I had an interview with directors of the CDT and with my supervisors for my project that I'm doing now. And then, I just started. And in my first year, I had some lectures and exams and sort of structured courses on sort of team building and science communication. And after the first 3 months, I just started my project, and I'm doing that full time now.
Was it the same in the sense that you knew the area that you wanted to go into, or was that something that you were kind of given through the program?
No, yeah, I did know. I mean, for me, I applied for a specific project, but I chose that project. That was my top choice. And then I went to my interview and I kind of asked, how much flexibility will I have in sort of shaping where this project goes? And both my supervisors were very open to sort of playing it as we go. So I do have full control over it, but I didn't know what the project would be when I got into it. And that's what I wanted.
Again, slightly different here. So I did my master's like Angus as well, and came out of that knowing that I wanted my career to be science focused and research. And I knew I wanted it to be in a clinical patient setting, but I wasn't quite sure on the exact setting. So from that, I needed something with a bit of flexibility. And so took up a role as a research assistant in my current lab, to, you know, get a better feel and see what the situation was and if I liked it. And turns out, yeah, I really liked it. And working with my supervisor, we worked on funding applications together, developed the project, developed the ideas, put that all into place, and then enrolled on the PhD a year later. So it seemed like a weirdly smooth process in the end, but at the start it felt very very chaotic trying to work out what you want to do, but it definitely pays off.
For me, I didn't know that I wanted to do a PhD. I did my BSc in Ireland in medical science, and I had a research project during that, but it was very diagnostic focused rather than research. And I took a job in a biochemistry lab, and I kind of knew while I was there that it wasn't really my thing. Immunology was what I wanted to do. So then I applied to the master's here, and like I really kind of took one thing, like one step at a time with it. Like I just looked at the master's as being 1 year, and then during that year I decide what I want to do and like that. So I did a master's in immunology. I worked as a research assistant in the lab that I did my master's project in, which is now the same lab that I'm doing my PhD in. I mean, like I'm really happy now, but I definitely didn't know that I wanted to do a PhD during my bachelor's. It just kind of happened, but I'm happy with the way it's happened.
So I guess all of you came into it in very different ways, but do you have advice for someone who's thinking they might want to do a PhD and maybe isn't sure or doesn't really know how to go about it?
If I go back to kind of my experience as a BSc, I did mine at Leeds Metropolitan University in sports science, and have now ended up doing clinical research in sepsis. So it was a very long, convoluted journey to actually get here. So what I would say is don't put too much pressure on yourself on where you're going. Have a rough idea of what you want and explore lots of different avenues and opportunities. And, you know, even if that means going into the workplace before doing a PhD or going straight into a PhD, it doesn't matter. It's kind of, I'd say, what feels right for you and what drives you as well. That would be my kind of advice.
I think I'd agree with that. I think if you can definitely start working somewhere, because it takes time to know what you like and what you're good at. And I think from working, you really get that, and it helps build confidence too, which I think is really important for the PhD. Not any kind of time pressure.
Also, on top of that, it's still like, I still don't know exactly what I want to do after this. It's still an evolving process. I'm still making plenty of mistakes, that's for sure. So it's also like a great learning curve on top of that, and it's constantly evolving.
I agree with that as well. And I would say just really take the time to make the decision, because a PhD is a long process and you want to make sure that it's something you're really passionate about when you start it. So I have several friends that were applying, and they just would instantly feel tempted to accept the first offer they got, even if that wasn't really their dream project, because they'd think, oh, then I'm guaranteed it and I don't have to worry about applications anymore. So I'd say don't feel pressured to do that. And also, if you do kind of want to follow my sort of route of going straight in, after a master's without working first. Just try and think about what kind of PhD you want. And if you want a lab-based PhD, just make sure that you enjoy being in the lab. If you don't enjoy your master's, basically, maybe a PhD, you know, in that kind of field isn't the best thing for you.
Did you have to apply to a lot of different places before you got the PhD that you wanted?
Yeah, I think generally, yes. I think everyone I know just experiences some sort of rejection, because I think it's a much more personal process than applying for jobs. There's only one person that they take on for each project, and a lot of it is based on, you know, do you get on with a supervisor? Do they get on with you? It's a two-way street. It's not just, are you right for the project? It's, is the group right for you? So I was really lucky, and my top choice, which was the first one I applied for, I got the offer, and that's the project I'm doing now. But even after I had that offer, I kept going to interviews, and I got some rejections, some acceptances, because I thought, I just want to keep my options open. I want to see what a PhD would be like at other places before accepting this. And the interviews were really character building. I learned a lot about what interview experiences are like, and I'd never really experienced rejection before. So I think that was kind of a really important skill that will hopefully help me when I decide what I want to do next.
Yeah. I'll say, just make sure you try and find your motivation for it, really. Like, I feel a lot of people come into the PhD and be like, oh, I want a PhD because, like, it's a title and it's like the sort of natural progression. But if you don't have the actual passion for that topic, I find people tend to drop off a bit. So I say, really, like, look to make sure the PhD is what you want, because it's, you're motivated to do it, not because it's like a natural progression. So I'd say, yeah, take some time before applying, hence what I did as well. Just like take a year out to work and make sure it's actually something you really want to do before just jumping into it, because 4 years is a long commitment to do one thing. So yeah, you really have to make sure you're like, this is the right path for you, because it can be quite stressful and tiresome sometimes. So.
Okay, so now I have some questions from students who are kind of from the ages of about 14 to 18. So there's quite a range of different things they want to know from you. One of the main ones we got is, what does an average day look like for you?
For me, every day is very different. I'm split between two research labs, so usually I alternate between them. So one day I might be in one day I might be in the other one day I might be in both. Usually, because my project involves kind of making drugs, characterizing them and then testing them, when I make a drug, I usually have a week of in that lab. And then when I test it, it's usually a 3 or 5 day experiment in my other lab. So usually I spend a week or a few days kind of on in the lab every day, and then a few days analyzing all my data and writing it up. Then there's also kind of training courses I go to sometimes. I also work as a teaching assistant, so I have some days or half days where I demonstrate labs to undergraduates. So I'd say it's very different every day. And one of the things I really love about being split between two different labs is, if I get really frustrated of being in one or my work just isn't working, I can go to the other one, so I can break up my routine to make sure that I'm always motivated.
Yeah, so I guess along those lines, someone else asked, what happens if your experiment doesn't work, which I guess is more relevant for you than for Angus. But what does happen if something goes wrong and it doesn't go to plan? Do you talk to a supervisor, or is it something that you have to try and fix on your own?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I mean, the truth is, things will go wrong. I mean, a PhD is kind of a 3-4 year project that no one has ever done before. So things will go wrong. You have to test the waters first and see what works. So I've just come off of a 6-month period of I was trying to culture a type of cell and select it, and they kept dying and they weren't pure enough. So I spent 6 months, amongst other things, really troubleshooting it and diving in deep to fix that, because I thought I could sort of keep going, but then I'd have to come back and redo all of this later on. So I think when something goes wrong, you just need to kind of take a deep breath, stop, evaluate, try and see why it's gone wrong. And yeah, I definitely involve my supervisors, so they know that I'm kind of stopping, taking a step back to fix the problem. And then sometimes problems won't be able to be fixed, because sometimes what you're trying to do just isn't possible. And if that happens, then I think it's always good to have a plan B, try and think, is there another way I could do this? And I think the best way to do that is have a good support network, not just your supervisors. I think it's really important to have friends doing PhDs as well, or people in neighboring research groups that you can talk to sometimes just to sort of vent and to get a second opinion on what they think the problem might be and how to fix it.
I would agree that every day is different. It kind of depends. There are days when I wouldn't be in the lab at all, and then there's days where I'd be in the lab for 12 hours a day. I like those days a lot more. But yeah, I mean, it's quite flexible as well. That's one of the things I like about it. You know, you can kind of, you plan your day yourself and you're kind of your own boss. Typical day would be like probably looking at emails in the morning and then setting up experiments or running experiments in the day.
Just to touch on Helena's point there, I thought that was a great way to put it in terms of building support networks around you from different labs. I think that's a really sound bit of advice, not just in PhD life, but all life in general. But for me, typical day is, it's every day is completely different. It's either setting up experiments, coordinating different clinical trials, designing new experiments and then analyzing data and presenting that to different group members and to different teams to help support and troubleshoot. So it's quite a dynamic process and is keeps you on your toes, that's for sure.
I guess because I'm not really lab based, so mine's more computation based, so it's quite similar most days. So literally most days I'm like, I'll go to the office or a coffee shop or one of the various other colleges in Cambridge and just sit down and code quite a lot. It's quite one day compared to everyone else's. But yeah, I normally spend like the first like hour or so in the morning when I start working, like reading papers or I'm reading current like blog posts, new developments in sort of AI or like structural engineering. And then, just kind of spend the rest of the day just coding, replying to emails, trying to come up with like collaborations with other like supervisors. Obviously, like interspersed with like lab demonstrations and like supervisions, which are quite good. But then also, they kind of after you take on too much, and then you realise like, oh, I actually have to do a PhD now. So it's very much sometimes when I've got 4 days of just teaching, which is fun and they go really quickly. But then you realise that like 7 PM that you've done no work that day. So
I mean, the next question is probably the most relevant to you then. So is it boring doing the same thing every day?
Not really, no, because I think most of mine's like, I guess my coding stuff is like more, you're trying to solve a problem. So there's always like there's always an end goal in sight. So it's very much just like, you have a bit of code that you're really stuck on for like a few days and something is like really struggling to work out a solution for it. Because I guess like everyone here, like you're doing something that no one's ever done before. Yeah. So it's like really no one you can come to for like advice sometimes. It's very much you just on your own. But I guess that comes back to the point about like having that intrinsic motivation for your PhD and not being external. So like, I guess my passion is like, I want to solve these problems because I intrinsically want to, not because my supervisor says I have to, sort of thing. So it's very much trying to find back to the point of like, why you're doing the PhD. Like, I enjoy doing this work, hence why I'm doing the PhD. So it's not too bad. It does get boring sometimes, but then you sort of take your days off and you've got the teaching and then you've got social events, so it's a lot better than working, put it that way.
So all of you have obviously said that your supervisors played a big role in what you actually do your PhD on. So quite a few people have asked how much contact you have with your supervisor and what happens if you don't get along with them.
I think back to the point that was made previously, the PhD really is about having that two-way relationship. So I'd recommend to anyone before going to the PhD, make sure you get on with your supervisor. It's like, I've had a few friends that have like just haven't and had like big arguments, and it's like the dynamic between two people just doesn't work. So very much, if you can have a PhD, it's about the project, yes, first and foremost, but the supervisor is the crucial role for and it's having that good relationship. But yeah, I think I see mine about once every 2 weeks, once every month. But I guess it's a bit like I guess I've got a very set plan now of what I want to do. So he's very much just like, just get on with it and get this PhD going, sort of thing. So,
did you have more contact at the beginning?
The first 6 months or so, it'd be like every week, every 2 weeks, because it's very much just like an exploratory part of engineering PhDs. It's more just like trying to define the problem. Yeah. So it's very much just like an exploring part, and then like just straight into trials, I guess, like these guys and stuff.
I completely agree that the supervisor is really crucial. I think another piece of advice I would give is, even though your supervisor is technically your manager, you can manage that relationship yourself. So, and if you can control when you want to go to them and ask for a meeting, they're there to help. So you choose when you think you've got a piece of work you want their feedback on, when you want to present something. So I have two supervisors, and I usually have a meeting with each of them each week separately. And then I usually have a joint meeting maybe once a month. But if 1 week I just haven't got any data, or I just want more time to analyze, I just say, hey, can we meet next week instead? It can be hard sometimes when you don't have sort of good news to deliver, and it can kind of put some pressure on for that. But I think you get used to that. Just the first few months, you sort of get used to the pace and what they expect from you. And you kind of gain the confidence to sort of tell them what to expect. And one thing that I really enjoy about having two different supervisors is it doesn't happen very often, but sometimes I do have a slight disagreement with one of them, in the sense of they're excited about a part of my results that I may be excited about a different area, and I want to focus on that, and they want me to prioritize a different thing. But because there's three of us, if I talk to my other supervisor and they're in agreement with me, it's sort of two versus one. So I think that's why it's important when you kind of have a team of several people, more than just you and your supervisor, to have a good relationship with them both individually, but also have meetings, the three of you, so that when things like this happen, you make sure that everyone's on board with how the project's going and everyone is in agreement with what the best next steps are.
Do you always have two supervisors, or is that?
No, because I'm on a Centre for Doctoral Training, everyone on my CDT, because the whole point of the CDT is to be interdisciplinary, it's basically to train physical scientists and engineers to apply their problems to life sciences and medical applications. So we all have two supervisors. We have one physical scientist or engineer and a life scientist or medic.
So I guess it's nice for you to have that, the two different perspectives as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I usually have a meeting with my primary supervisor every week, and I'm quite lucky that I would see him around during the week as well, but it's usually one one-on-one meeting once a week. Similar to Helena, ideally, like, you'd have a meeting with both your primary and secondary supervisors every couple of months or every couple of weeks, but just with COVID, I haven't been able to have one with my second, but... Yeah, the first I'd see quite regularly.
Is there a difference between what your primary and secondary supervisors do for you?
I would say it's kind of like how Helena puts it. You have two people with two potentially very different ideas, and then you've got your own ideas. And I think it's particularly when you've got a really nice relationship, it's really nice to be able to bounce ideas and actually have the ability to voice what you like. Now, a lot of the time I'll say something stupid and just get shut down immediately, and that's completely okay, I think. But I find it a really nice creative environment. You're able to implement your ideas and basically a big melting pot of ideas and come out with a solid plan. So I think the roles are very similar. They obviously have their own areas of expertise. And I think as the student, it's you can make the most of that and take bits from both.
So someone else wants to know, what's the biggest failure you've faced in your career so far, and how did you overcome it?
Biggest failure? I think the most frustrating part when you're starting out with something new, particularly maybe it might be a new experiment or a new kind of like analysis or a new bit of code or something, and it's not not working for whatever reason. And I put it on myself very hard at the start, and it's taken me 6 months and it still wasn't working. And I took that to heart and considered that a failure. And it kind of got pretty sad at the end. But then you work through it, you keep positive, and you bring in and start branching out and asking different people, and you start to try and overcome that and fix it with a nice solution. But then I think as well, sometimes it just won't work, and you've got to be okay to at some point draw a line under things and say, hold your hand and say, okay, I can't get that to work, and that's totally okay. I think that's all part of the process. So yeah, I think failure is a tough word.
Yeah
no one wants to call that.
Helena, what do you think the best part of your job is?
The best part of my job? Well, I think that I get to go in the lab every day and do something that no one's ever done before. That's very exciting. And as Matt has said, it can be very frustrating when you can't get things to work. But when it does work, or even if you get a negative result, but you know for certain it hasn't worked and will never work, that's kind of new knowledge that you're bringing into the world that no one else has ever had. And something that it took me a long time to learn is that every single PhD is different and you can't compare yourself to others. Because sometimes I would see other people that started when I did and I would think, oh, they've published a paper. You know, they're doing so much better than me. I'm behind. Clearly I'm not as good in the lab as them. But now I've realized every project's different and progresses at a different pace. And that's okay. And the outcomes of each project will be completely different. And also you're learning. A PhD is still technically training. So I think it's good to sort of enjoy it and learn. I mean, now we can make mistakes and learn from it. That's fine. I feel like maybe 40 years down the line, whatever job I end up doing, I'll be in a senior enough position that I won't be able to spend as much time making mistakes and learning from them as I do now. So I'm just kind of enjoying it as I go.
So Angus, how has Corona changed how you work?
It changed quite a bit because I took the decision to actually intermit because I was about to start doing sort of like collecting my own data set for my project. And yeah, it required me to go to find a lot of buildings and test a lot of basically like vibrations in buildings. But everything got shut down there. So I ended up I've been intermitted because I thought there was not much point in wasting sort of like 4 or 5 months of funding just to kind of sit on my laurels, because I was very much at a part of my PhD now where I'm like ready to sort of like start really getting results now. So yeah, I actually intermitted, but then it allowed me to do a few other things. I had a few side projects that I wanted to start doing, which are now turning into papers, which is kind of fun. Yeah, it's affected me quite a bit actually. I've only just sort of came back into working on my PhD now. So yeah, it affected me quite a bit. It was mainly just because I wanted to make sure I had enough funding to last the PhD. So yeah, it was really quite frustrating actually.
Do you think that taking that break helped you though, because you've come back with a bit more of an interest in what you're doing?
Oh yeah, massively. Like it gave me, I kind of not recommend it to everyone to take an intermission, but to get like an oversight of your project, because I guess we all sort of get down this sort of rabbit hole and we can never really see the bigger picture.
Yeah.
It's quite nice to step back and maybe like, okay, what do I actually want to get out of my PhD? Not just the PhD, but then like sort of like soft skills and like what other things I actually want to get out and like where the exact direction my PhD wants to go, because I guess I'm so used to the day-to-day sort of grind of like just working on specific small problems like day after day that I kind of like lose sight of the overall picture. Mm-hmm. So it's really, honestly, it's really like good to me. I come back now with like a very good like map and clear image of what I want the PhD to look like at the end. So it's actually worked out really well.
Okay, we've got one last question, which is, what do you want to do after you finish your PhD?
Yeah, this is kind of a question that I guess toils many PhD people. I'm still quite undecided. I've got a few options for postdocs already that have been sort of sent my way. But yeah, I'm really not sure. I guess it all depends on like my partner, like what we want to do as well, where we want to be. Because I guess like many people, postdocs are quite few and far between. So it's trying to like actually be in the same locale as your partner again. So yeah, I have no idea honestly at this point. I've got yeah, like I said, I've got a few postdoc positions that I can do, but I'm not entirely sure is the correct answer.
Definitely stay within the field of academia.
I'm sitting on the fence. I'm very much sitting on the fence at this point, but
yeah.
Talk to me in 2 years and you have to make a decision. Answer.
Yeah, I have 2 years left, so I don't want to get my heart set on anything now because I think a lot can change in 2 years. If you'd asked me a few months ago, I think I would have said, yes, I definitely want to do a postdoc. But now, honestly, this whole pandemic has kind of changed my views on academia a bit. And now I'm considering maybe going into science policy. And I know my CDT kind of offers I could get an extra 3 months funding to go do an internship kind of at the Parliamentary Office for Science and Technology, which I'd quite like to do close to the end of my PhD, just to spend 3 months in science policy, seeing how it works, and then deciding if that's what I want. Because I'm sure we can all agree that a lot of the communication, especially at the early stages of the pandemic, a lot of the communication from the government was maybe not super clear. And I think it was quite obvious that not all of it was really shaped by scientists. So that just made me realise that science policy, which is something I knew nothing about, is actually super important, and that we probably need kind of a more diverse and sort of younger group of people in science policy that have been in the lab really recently. Because I think we're just kind of more in touch with research and how it works, as opposed to lots of the people that are in science policy now.
What was it about the pandemic that made you that changed your mind about academia?
I mean, it made me realise how uncertain it all is. I'm sure everyone will always tell you that academia is very unstable, especially when you're trying to start off as an independent researcher. A lot of it is dependent on if you get grants or if you publish. But just the fact that, I mean, Imperial, where I'm at, just completely shut down for a few months over the pandemic. Nothing was considered essential enough. And I've seen my own supervisors lose out on grants and on PhD students starting this October because of just funding changes. And yeah, that just made me realize, you know, this is just so stressful for them. And it's just so unstable. And clearly it's not seen as a priority, whereas other fields such as industry maybe are seen as more priority when it comes to funding. So yeah, it's just made me think, you know, I do have a partner, and if I want to settle down and have a family someday, is this really sustainable? Like, probably big things will happen again, like a pandemic or something else. And could I do this for the next 40 years of my life? And I'm just not sure anymore.
So I totally agree there. It is quite unstable, and often if you're going for postdocs, the funding and the contracts you go for are between 1 and 2 years, I'd say, on average. But for me, for the next 10, well, maybe not that long, five years, let's say, for me, that's ideal, because I envisage being able to go around different labs around the world and get short contracts, build up experience, and then take it from there. So I'm trying to use that to my advantage whilst I can probably deal with it being a little bit more stable. So just trying to like take advantage of that, because I've got no immediate need to settle down and quite want to see the world. So I'm hoping I can combine the two together and try something new.
Yes, well, a lot can happen in the next couple of years, but I definitely want to work abroad. I'd like to go to the States and maybe do a postdoc or two, and I would like to try industry. That's something that I think would be quite nice. But yeah, not certain, but that's what I'm thinking.
About half the questions have been, do you still have a social life? So just to prove that you are still all human beings, what do you like to do in your free time?
I would go out at the weekend. and I do try and, like, I think it's really important to have a normal or a, you know, a healthy balance between, like, I think it's really important with the PhD to put the time aside for yourself to cook healthy meals or to go to the gym, like whatever makes you feel good, because it's really easy to just get bogged down with the amount of work that you have to do. It can be a bit overwhelming, but I just think, like, taking, you know, even if it's just a couple of minutes in the morning to have a coffee or something like that, it's, like, I found that has really helped.
Social life's key. Without that, there's no way I'd be getting through my PhD, that's for sure. So it's quite nice, like, just there's a nice cohort at King's, where we'll go out for drinks post work, and they're people of similar ilk to you, going through the same kind of problems, and you can discuss it all in a very informal environment with friends, as opposed to a more formal chat with your supervisor or you know, in a formal setting with peers. So that's quite nice. And then outside of that, I like keeping to my sport, playing that, keeping that up, seeing different friends outside of work. And that certainly helps to keep you sane through this, particularly through the COVID period, where it was extremely busy for us staying open. So yeah, I think those support networks outside of PhD life and work are important, and I certainly didn't sacrifice that, and I don't think anyone should ever sacrifice that for their job or PhD or whatever.
Yeah, I outside of my PhD, I do quite a lot of sports actually. I do like bouldering, I play rugby, and then also play basketball. The bar manager at my college, so I guess Cambridge is different in the sense that we have college systems. So my college is a mature college, so we kind of like have everyone sort of on the same campus, which is quite nice. So I'm also the bar manager, so you kind of find me in the bar quite often. I have been known to go out on a Wednesday night still, which is quite funny, because you see the people you teach, which is strange. I mean, you kind of like sort of drunkenly shout at them to get you a drink, or otherwise you'll give them bad grades, even though I have no influence on the grades whatsoever, but I've definitely tried to use that before. I still sometimes act like I'm an undergraduate still, which is probably to my detriment sometimes, but yeah, I definitely still go out a bit too much sometimes. So.
I completely agree that it's really important to have a good work-life balance. I think especially at the start of a PhD, where there's kind of, you see a few years ahead of you and there's just a tremendous amount of work to do, I think it's really important to take it, kind of try and do normal working hours and a regular schedule as much as you can, even though a PhD is really unfortunately not a regular 9-to-5, because I think if you just try and, you know, work really, really hard and stay switched on all the time, you're just going to burn out, and then you're going to need a much bigger break than if you take smaller breaks along the way. So yeah, I stay in touch with lots of friends that kind of are doing PhDs, but also ones that aren't. I think it's important for me at least to meet up with people that don't always have science on their mind as well. It makes me stay grounded. And I play some music. I've started knitting during lockdown, which makes me sound like a 60-year-old grandma. But yeah, I just like doing a lot of crafting, and I do a lot of volunteering with school children from disadvantaged backgrounds to just show them what STEM can be and just encourage them to pursue STEM if that's what they want to do.
You all enjoyed the episode as much as I enjoyed recording it. I found it really interesting discussing what they did their PhDs on and the different routes they took to get into it. Hope you enjoyed the episode too, and if you do, feel free to share it and stay tuned for the next one.